same way. When the word came to the switch of the Sunday, I forgot there's somebody who's preached a few times. And here I am. Now it's a privilege to be with you. Lord, I was able to tell you that I was speaking this morning about the stewardship more importantly than what I have to say about it is what Jesus has to say about it, which he does very plainly in chapter 16 of the Gospel according to Luke. So let me ask all of you to find that passage. It's on page 875 of those black Bibles there in the pews, or at home, you know, your own Bible there, or these days, of course, make some of your own Bibles. For many of you, I go on your phone. If you read the first 16 verses, he also said to the disciples, there is a rich man who had buried here, bound and charges were brought to him, and his man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, what is he saying about you? Turning the account of your management, so you can no longer be manager. The manager said to himself, what shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? And I throw back the pig and I'm ashamed to beg. I decided what to do. So that when I remove their management, people can receive me into their houses. So summoning your master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, how is he over my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. He said, I'll take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. And he said to another man, how much do you owe? He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said, you'll take your bill and write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. The things of this world are more shrewd than dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it falls away, so that when it fails, they may receive you within the eternal dwellings. Whatever is made for one another in little, everyone is also paid for in much. The one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. You have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. On this passage before, not surprisingly, it's a life changer for me. And I'm going to tell you about that in just a moment. But I know it's our thought on the sermon. I try to restudy and retake the passage. And I have to say, this time around, I've noticed something that I really haven't paid so much attention to on other occasions. And that's right there in verse 1. And this couple of this following passage, we're going to look at it carefully. But it says, he also said to the disciples, in Matthew chapter 15, Jesus in the crowd was found, and he gives them a series of parables. They're Pharisees, relative to other people there. disciples, who was speaking to the whole group, and tells them of the things that were the parable of the prodigal son. But now he deliberately turns notice to the disciples. If you're a disciple of Jesus, this is for you. And I don't know where this came from, but you could be a Christian and not a disciple. So go ahead, you know, if you're a graduate Christian and you're a disciple, that's not in the Bible. If you confess Jesus this way, you are a disciple. You may say, I'm a lousy disciple, or return to disciple or whatever, I'm not going to read from. But look at you're a disciple. So you need to hear the word of Jesus this morning. As he tells us, the gospel was about money. As we shall look at now as the Lord begins, the lesson was to teach you a story or a parable. As we go to this case, it's a parable of a rich man who has a manager. The word also can be used steward, by the way, they're interchangeable. But there is the case that someone is wealthy, they just can't handle or they need somebody to manage their affairs. But it's simply done, by the way. I was chatting the food services with Mount Henry around the church now. To say that because we agree together that on the one hand, a steward needs to be competent, but the most important element of stewardship in this case is trustworthiness. No matter what, God putting all of my affairs under the control of this manager. Now, in this parable, the manager has failed the owner. And the owner of all the farmers is, you know, what do we need to talk about this? I'm going to fire you. And so Monday, I want you to come in with the books and for the whole run before I fire you. Now, you know, I've heard about these people that get let go by their company and they say, you have an hour to pay what you ask if you're gone. And I thought, that's terrible. Well, you know what? What was this thing you've done between the time you're told you're fired and you actually have to leave? And that's what happened seriously. This manager comes out and he says, what am I going to do? Well, when I'm out of this job, this is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to be busy, man. Calls in, I'm sure there are others, but two of the daughters to his master. And perhaps you're going to be just sent out. No, this is not dishonest, by the way. You get the point? He's still a steward, isn't he? He still has that authority. Total control over the master's affairs. And so it's the master's chair. Well, look at verse 8. This is a verse that's thrilled a lot of people. It's actually a better, more helpful translation in this English standard version than it is in King James. But here's the verse. The master commended the dishonest manager for his what? You should know this. He didn't say this is great. Hey, this is wonderful. He asked me all this money. He said, well, I'm going to give it to this guy. He knows how to get what he needs. And what did he do? He uses money, or the power he had over money, to get something higher, something more important. In this case, what it was for simply his blessing his life. He wants to survive. And Jesus reminds the disciples that he's got a higher calling than that. But check the half of verse 8. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation, the sons of light. He's talking to the disciples who are sons of light. They're the bringers of the kingdom. Hey, you're the people with good news. You're the people who have the message to change the world. And this guy same. Yeah? We're talking about growth. There's not. There's a lot of people there. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth. But when it fails, they can deceive you into eternal dwellings. I'm not sure what that reference to eternal dwellings is all about, but it is interesting to me that first of all, he labels money as what does he call it? Look at verse 9. Unrighteous wealth. Literally, the mammon of unrighteousness. Dirty money. Nasty stuff. Filthy labor. But what is he going to do with it? What is he going to do with it? What he would expect is to say, hand off, run, and have nothing to do with money. It's terrible for the rest of your life. Now give yourself over to poverty or whatever else. But that's not what he says to him. He says to his disciples, money gave you friends. Learn how to manage your money to the progress of your purpose in life, of your goals, of your cause. Just like this. I'm a customer who's around there. So, number one, he calls it unrighteous money. You're going to see that phrase again in verse 11. If you've not been faithful in unrighteous wealth, it's called. But the end of it is the same word. I'm calling unrighteous wealth, but it's money. And I was interested in taking the international version when they quote that verse. Same words, but they actually capitalized the word M. Those who come under God or end, they become M. Mammon is the old word that was used. I guess it's like having a pet snake. Right? When you love that snake, and then my wife went back and forth, by the way. Or a pet tiger, maybe that's better. But you love that animal, but never forget this tiger. And so the challenge from Jesus our Lord is to learn how to manage money. Yeah, that's the most down to earth, the kind of stuff we live with every day. But verse 11 is a key text for this. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? So, after all, there are far more important things in life than money. Jesus is not fixed on money. But he is saying this. If you do not know how to manage your money, if it's touched by the throat, you're missing out on far more important things in life. So, you better get down to business. Start to learn how to manage your money. There's a lot of things that are open up for you if you do. If you don't, you're in trouble. Well, it's quite different from my mother that experienced this. My mind went back this is years ago. But I remember a couple coming in to see me for counseling. They had out of another circumstances in that area. Or somehow on. They were a Christian couple, wonderful people, hard working, both had good paying jobs. But they were also buying into totally the way of the world in terms of what you want for money. I'm like, how do you put on your credit card? That's what helps them make the payments and so forth. And anyway, we talked together about their situation and we talked it through. I began to will become more and more powerful as if they were in the moment. It's powerful, and it should be afraid. Because that whole house of cards would go collapsing. What would happen if they lost this job or her job situation changed or whatever? The boy was just blowing up their marriage, closing the door to his couple. They all came back to the fact that they had not learned that basic lesson of this management of money. So Jesus is eminently practical. I have to tell you what it did for me as a pastor. Because of course I was far too holy and righteous to ever talk about money in church. You know, I was unworthy of my preaching. And in the end, I was living in it. You know, when I find out that you help people struggle with their money issues, I'm holding them back from higher things, from greater riches. Even the food services we had kept for the people. We're talking about this very thing. But now this capture, captive, in bondage, because you haven't been able to have any money, just holds you back from so many other things. So now, we're talking about something very down to earth and practical. That's why, by the way, we kept studying this one I said earlier, because, you know, at time, that's when you stop and reset. In terms of looking at the blanket, he said, well, how does this affect me? And by the way, not only that blanket is actually about the letter that that committee wrote, if you were back in his court, you had Laura, Scott, and who else? Yeah, okay, Sarah, yeah, okay, yeah. It's just a different stuff. I suspect that you may not have a chance to stop me over the time they stop you something about it. But this was a different flavor that I really did appreciate as I read that letter. It's full of issues of priorities and vision. And that comes in nuts and bolts and all the sense of testing. But it's very, very thoughtfully and carefully written. I said, this is one of the flavor of the young generation of leadership. There's a chance to say, as a committee, we review the stewardship of what you are entrusting to us. But it's only half the story, isn't it? The other half is, well, what about the stewardship? What about the way that you are giving and serving the Lord? And that's one of the one way that we will remain that they really know ability to give because they're in such debt. So, fear the word of Jesus is all I'm saying. If you have not been faithful in a righteous wealth, you have not financial benefit, maybe I have been blessed myself. I've made myself accountable. I've been in the place. Some of you may be there where I'm using one credit card to pay off another credit card. That's bad. Please, it's a bad place to be. Or if you're using your house, you can pay off a credit card debt. So you're free of credit card payment, right? Push it around. So you're turning all over again. Now you've doubled it. And yet, why don't I put away into all those stories? You know, if you don't know where you are, I'm about to wrestle with this question. I'm very thankful that actually out of the way of the last several generations, ministries have risen up to help people. Thank you for your Christian stewardship. In my case, by the way, I was helped by a very dear friend who was a senior stockbroker at he was a very much at the time. And he helped. Big bucks, but he helped as a ministry to Christians. He would also help people like people. And so now that they have helped them up in their books with me, they did. And that's because, what is it? That was his ministry. What was his calling? What was it? Was it wonderful? But these ministries have risen up to help people think through their whole question of their spiritual life, just like them, the verse 11 of our text. Learning to be faithful in unrighteous mammon. just like, yeah, great job. Give them one of you. Stop. But not to say, what about my commitment to the church? It should be part of it. But what about the larger issues involved? And so in fact, when I close out our time this morning, I look at three words. It's like, and by the way, I'm sure most of you who are here remember this, but we get back to my old records, and back in 2014, I preached a sermon on this same text, and I came up with these three words. So if you remember, I'm sure you do. When I said in 2014, I would say these moments, how did you actually know that I'm preaching myself? But here's the words. Ownership. It's on the insert, by the way, if you haven't noticed. Ownership, stewardship, and generosity. And it does begin with this question of ownership. Who is the true owner of all that you have? Your savings account, your savings account, your investments, your house, your car, your retirement, your future, your children. Who's the true owner? Oh, I can't hear you. Who's the true owner? Theologically, and we are on the same from the heart. From the heart, we really say this is God's money. And so God has to start, that's what the parable, what voices in the parable. And so these various ministries are mentioned up in the church where I was pastoring in the DC area, we had Crown Ministries. Now, it's one of my questions. Dave Ramsey, and Larry Burkett was one of the early ones. Well, there's a difference in the cities. There's a problem with these people. And we had Financial Peace University there, right? At one point, we don't want to look like that. Now, there was a couple over here that taught Financial Peace. Not the name for the first service, and he did it up. And it moved away, I think, to you with your kid. But in Crown Ministry, we start off with these basic principles that within these ministries, the churches of people who run these church, and the big consequence of when they start with is these basic principles. And one of the first things that kind of pops in at the end of the day, is that there's a deep bit of microphone. But we sort of go along. So one of the first things that you do now is a little document. It's not legal, but it's called a quick title deed. And it's a piece of paper that says, I give over to God, or I acknowledge that God is the true owner of. And then there's a place to make a long list of everything you can think about. He says, I acknowledge the ownership of God and his timing. His identity with God. Now, when you say, when I sat down with Heather, and if you're a married couple, these programs always insist you do it together as a couple, and that's incredibly important. It's still the case, by the way, that the number one issue where communication breaks down in marriage is money. Nothing at all about marriage or a relationship with that. So we know that. But I have to tell you, when we finally actually signed off on that quick claim deed, acknowledging God as the owner of all things, that had a real impact on us. Just reminding us who is the owner. So, folks, that's the first thing you've got to settle. I'm the manager, not the owner. You know, a lot of times you can talk about my house, trust in my book, in my car, whatever else. Just go into the back of your mind and try to not lose God. So that's the second word of stewardship. And again, this is where it comes down to the practical issues way, way beyond what we can talk about this morning, but simply recognize that we are called to manage what God has given to us for better or for worse, and some of you are in tough places. Some of you can't make the difference. The other way. And just say, for all of the places I may encourage you, I'm sure our deacons are available to help. I know there are others that serve at different services. Ask for help. Make yourself accountable. The first thing you need, you know, is done is people spend money. What are you actually earning? What are you getting from? And what are you spending? And the other big question, how much debt are you in? And this argument is a little less real debt. So if you are paying for Chinese dinner that you ate 6 months ago, that ain't right. That's not a good use of God's money. Right? You agree on that? I mean, the amount of interest that people get themselves into credit card debt these days, not this in the world, will really lead you down that path. But again, let me go back to the principle of verse 11. And I probably don't need to tell you this, but if you can't pay your bills, if you can't manage the money, if you don't know how to live out of a budget, that's blocking you from all sorts of other things in life. We better go to a hard place. Be a steward of God, which God has given you. A faithful steward. And other things will open up for you as well. Because everybody's generosity, and if there's anything that is general to the New Testament, is the call to be generous with what God has given us. If you're in the Old Covenant, you have a law from us, it's 10%. The first 10%, by the way, you're all the first fruits. Not what's left over at the end of the month, because there's nothing left over at the end of the month. That is one of the 15th of the month, probably. Most of us. In other words, to be generous, you also have to be thoughtful in your planning and in your development. I suppose, in the New Testament sense, that the best sermon might be that text that I put in the insert. Corinthians chapter 16, verse 2. On the very first day of the week, it would be Sunday. So here's the church gathering together. Each of them is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper. So the more we are blessed, the more we bless others. That's the principle, it seems to me. What was keeping the fourth, not the law of the tribe, but the person of Jesus. The law he was rich, and for our sakes became poor. That we through his poverty might be made rich. Ownership, stewardship, generosity. Close with
inviting you to pray a prayer that will show him that what you have in your mind sticks there. Let's put it up on the board. So maybe for some of you, when you're praying, we give thee but thy own. What I have against thee, all that we have is thine alone. The trust of the Lord for thee. If not, may we thy bounties trust the stewards to receive and joyfully that thou blessest us, but thee, our first fruits give. And so these are the words. Let's go back and just pray this as our closing prayer all together.